Thank you very much for your comments, and thank you all for coming. Excuse me. I'd like to thank the panelists for their time and attention to this and the work they do. I'd also like to thank our echo John's comments and thank our co-sponsors, the Gardner Howland Shaw Foundation and the Dwyer and Clora Foundation, and our co-hosts today, the co-chairs of the Judiciary, Senator Creedon and Representative O'Flaherty. I have a very short PowerPoint just to go over some of the findings of our report. And I just want to note that you'll notice on the slides there's no attribution. Virtually all of the information that's in the slides is in the report, and there's sufficient citations, I hope, in the report. Why should we care about criminal justice policy? It affects public safety. It uses significant taxpayer resources. The public has an opinion about it, and there is research that shows what works and what doesn't. In the past 30 years, our approach to criminal justice has focused on imprisonment as a response to crime. The United States now has the highest rate of incarceration in the world, and we incarcerate more of our citizens than any other country, including Russia and China. We now have 650,000 prisoners returning to our communities every year, and more than 50% of those are rearrested or returned to prison within 3 years. How do we get to this point? There's a lot of variables, but some of the ones that the research has shown most prominently are tougher sentencing laws, mandatory minimums, three strikes, longer prison terms. Parole in many states was eliminated. In Massachusetts, it was restricted like it was in a number of other states. And recidivism rates increased as well. I should say something about recidivism because there's a lot of definitions of recidivism, and it's pretty universal that there's no set definition. But when we talk about recidivism, we talk about the return to prison or jail, the rearrest, or the reconviction of an offender within a certain period, usually measured in 1 and 3 year intervals. So you can see our incarcerative policies over the past 20 years have resulted in a significant increase in the prison population. This just shows you prison. It doesn't address parole, probation, it doesn't include parole or probation. So those numbers can push this up to 7 million and also jails. With increased incarceration, there's a corresponding increase in the cost of incarceration. We've gone from just over 10 billion in 1987, 20 years ago, to in excess of 44 billion in 2007. And again, this does not include the cost of parole, probation, or any law enforcement. And with spending increases like that, you have to make very difficult budget decisions. Here's a graphic illustration of the increased cost of corrections versus the increased expenditures of higher education spending over the past 20 years. There's an argument that the rising incarceration rates over the past 20 some odd years have also reduced crime rates. We have, in fact, until the past few years, had a period of declining crime rates since the mid-1990s. But higher incarceration rates are only account for a percentage of the crime rate, or the crime reduction. Most of the credit for decreasing crime is due to the improved economy during the 1990s, strategies such as community policing, and a generational shift away from crack cocaine use. Another gauge of the effectiveness of incarceration as a crime control measure is whether it actually reduces recidivism. And this graph illustrates that while we were incarcerating many more people, recidivism rates were also climbing in some of the key crime areas. And why is there so much failure, failure being recidivism? Research indicates that inmates come into prison with substance abuse and mental health problems, with poor employment histories and antisocial relationships, and often return to the same environment that was present prior to going to prison. These problems don't just disappear because a person is sent to prison, and this can be a recipe for recidivism. In Massachusetts, we've seen similar results in a significant growth in the prison population, nearly 300% in the past since 1980, and a similar increase in our corrections budget. In just 10 years, it's risen $300 million. The Crime and Justice Institute conducted a public opinion survey a couple of years ago and found that the public wants a change in the Commonwealth's approach to crime. Incidentally, about a year after that, Zogby did a national poll which mirrored the findings that Massachusetts had. So Massachusetts isn't so off the average of what people across the country believe we should be doing in corrections. Large majorities in both Massachusetts at 69% and Boston at 77% want more spent on programs to proven to reduce recidivism. And in this one, 66% want policymakers to focus on the causes of crime rather than focus on tougher punishments. Somewhat surprisingly, 88% favor sentencing either through sentencing guidelines or case-by-case decision-making over mandatory minimum sentences. Here are some facts. 25,000 people in our prisons and jails now in Massachusetts. About 97% of those will eventually return. And the cost of incarcerating an inmate is about $43,000 a year, while it costs about $18,000 a year to send a kid to UMass, including tuition, fees, room, and board. We know intuitively the cost of recidivism. Creates new crime victims, increases the costs of corrections and public safety, further destabilizes communities and families, and returned offenders don't contribute to the workforce or pay taxes. It would also be useful, we found, to see if we could identify what savings could be, whether there could be a number ascribed to reducing recidivism. We looked at this number of different ways and figured that there's about a $4.3 million saving, corrections-only savings, if you reduce recidivism by one percentage point. Now, this is somewhat difficult to realize, because when there's an open prison bed, it's filled pretty quickly. So in order to really fully develop the savings from lower recidivism rates, law enforcement and the courts must be active partners to ensure that open prison beds are not filled with low-risk offenders who could be in less expensive community-based programming. So what do we do? We have several states and reentry models, some of which we'll talk about today, that have decided to take a look at recidivism, recidivism reduction, risk reduction, and they've developed a series of different models, but they're at their foundation are leadership, collaboration, and a reliance on evidence-based principles and practices. Here in Massachusetts, cost, again, public opinion and research. We think that the pieces are in place to move on this. And in fact, corrections agencies in Massachusetts have made significant progress. They're using tools and practices that the evidence indicates will reduce recidivism, but their efforts require support from many agencies and the community to realize long-term stable risk reduction outcomes for ex-offenders. There are several thoughtful recommendations that have been made over the years through various reports, and we encourage the leaders to take a look at those. They're still useful. They still talk about the issues that have yet to be addressed in Massachusetts. And that's it. I would like to turn this over to our facilitator, Tom Van Hemmert. He is a criminal justice planner from Virginia, and he will lead our panel discussion this afternoon. And I'd like to welcome the panelists up on the stage as well. Thank you.